Okay. Oh, I thought I was going to be late, but I got here on time.
On time for what? What are you wearing?
You told me to dress for the occasion. You said to dress for the occasion. Oh, and I brought props. So see, here's a soft pretzel. I have a bottle of curry ketchup. I have a pocket schnitzel. I have a fresh cold pint of beer, and I found a wiener in my car. So here it is. Still on theme, huh?
Okay, I'm not touching the last one. I have no idea what you're talking about.
You said we were going to celebrate the biggest festival in Germany. I mean, it was kind of weird that we were celebrating Oktoberfest in the middle of summer, but I mean, here I am. I'm dressed for it. I have props. I'm ready to celebrate. Woohoo!
No, I said we were celebrating the biggest like board game awards in Germany, the Spiel des Jahres.
I heard you say we were celebrating the biggest festival in Germany.
Why would you ever assume I'm talking about anything other than board games?
Just thought that Oktoberfest was the biggest festival in Germany.
I'm Jaina.
And I'm Sharon.
And together, we're Jazz's Begansy.
Moving you from antsy to gansy.
And today,
Today we're celebrating the biggest festival in Germany.
no, we're celebrating the biggest board game awards, probably in the world, really.
Yeah, that's fair.
So the nominees for the Spiel des Jahres came out a little while ago, and for the first time ever, we've actually managed to play all of them.
And by we, she means her. I do have a couple of games that I have tried.
You're pretty close. There's only two you're missing, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Well,
just
that's
two.
pretty
Just
good.
two. Not too shabby.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, we're going to talk about the nominees for the regular spiel and then the Kenner spiel, the connoisseur games, and we will give our predictions and or what games we hope are going to win. All right, so we got a lot of games to get through. Let's just dive right in. Okay, so we will start with the regular spiel, and we will start with Dorf Romantic, the board game. And that is designed by Michael Palm and Lucas Zack, and it is published by Pegasus Spiel.
How would you
So I think,
describe this game?
so Dorf Romantic, to start, it's based on a video game that I haven't actually played, but I've heard it's quite peaceful and relaxing. So the game, it's a tile laying game, kind of similar to Carcassonne. You're laying out hexagonal tiles, and there's different land types on them. You've got forests and wheat fields, you've got a river and train line, etc. Cities. You
Did you
gotta have
say a
cities.
ripper?
River, yep.
Oh, river. Okay. I thought there was
Yes,
like
a
a
river.
Jack the Ripper in the middle that was trying to stab people. Not that type of game. Okay.
I don't think it's that kind of game.
Yeah, that's why I should have played that game, but hey.
Yes. Anyway, so this game plays 1 to 6 players, but it is cooperative. And honestly, I can see it being best as a solo game or a two-player game if you like co-ops. And basically, in this game, you are going to be laying down these land tiles, and you're alternating. There's land, regular land tiles, and there's also these gold tiles. So, if at the start of your turn there aren't at least 3 active goals out on the map, you have to flip one of the gold tiles. It's going to give you a landscape type. And then you have to flip the corresponding, there's little tiles that have either four, like the numbers 4, 5, or 6 on them, and they correspond to the different land types. And you have to flip one of those, put it on the tile, and that's going to tell you basically, okay, you need to have a, to meet this goal, you have to have a wheat field of size 5, say. And then you have to decide, okay, where am I going to put this down on my on your tableau. The trick being, to meet these goals, you have to have the exact number that it requires. So if you have a big field that you're going for and you've got like 7, you can't put that down and satisfy a 5. It has to be exactly 5 without going over.
Do you know all of the goals at the beginning? Or do the goals
they're all the same, basically. There's goals for all the different land types, and each goal is either gonna be like a size 4, 5, or 6. And you could go and double check. I didn't check how many of each there were, but that's very easily something you could do. So you had an idea like, oh, okay, I know that there hasn't been the 6 yet for this one, or there's going to be another one coming up. So how do I plan for that? You're also trying to get, for each landscape type, there's one regular landscape tile that's going to have a little flag of that color on it. So you want to get that flag in the biggest landscape of that type that you can, but you then have to close off that landscape. So kind of like closing off your cities in Carcassonne, aren't going to be able to score that unless you've closed it off. Again, so you're going to score for those largest land types, and then you're going to score for your longest river and your longest railroad. And then the cool thing with this game is it's kind of like a little campaign game. So at the end of each game, you're going to total up your score and you're going to refer to this little campaign sheet. You basically figure out where your score is on their little tracker, and that's going to tell you how many little dots you get to mark off on your little map path. And as you wander through that, it's going to unlock different boxes. There's, I think, 5 little sub boxes with the game, and they'll unlock different challenges you can go for, new landscape tiles, presumably new challenge tiles. So it's just this, like, it's a co-op. You're all working together. Even if you have a horrible game, it doesn't really matter. You just play it again. It just, you so know, you don't like get to mark off as many. Dot.
Is this like a game of cooperative Carc on steroids, or is it enough of a different game that it reminds you of it, but it's not really that game?
Well, technically there is a cooperative version of Carc out now. I think it's a different game because it doesn't have that stressful feel of like, oh, this is going wrong, oh, I blocked. Like, you can still block yourself off and mess things up, but having a bad play doesn't feel awful, I guess. And you're not like trying to put meeples down to score people and block people. Like, it's, I played it solo at a board game cafe. I might have gotten some weird looks. And I initially was like, oh, this is really easy. I'm just kind of putting things down. This scores this scores that, this scores that. And then I realized towards the end of the game where I'd kind of blocked myself in, and I'm like, oh, okay. So it's like, it's a nice puzzle, and it's very relaxing. Like, I could just see me, if we had this, I could see me just playing it like a nice lazy summer afternoon and just playing it for 3 or 4 hours straight until I got bored of the puzzle. And then you put it away and you pull it out later, and it's going to be really easy to get back into.
3 or 4 hours, really?
It's just, yeah, because I played it once and I was like, you know what? I got some more time. I'm gonna play it again. And I did. And I had a horrible second game, but it was still kind of nice. It was like, oh, okay. Well, if it was tracking, I only would have gotten to unlock like 1 or 2 spots on that path, but that's fine. And then eventually you're going to decide that path that you're marking off in your campaign sheet splits. So you can kind of go off in different directions to unlock different boxes and...
Oh, yeah. So the campaign itself isn't necessarily linear. Is there a story to the campaign? You just kind of unlock different perks and rewards and you continue on like that?
I didn't really see that there is a story. It just kind of explained, oh, now you've unlocked this item and here's how you'll use it. I didn't really get a story vibe from it, but it felt kind of nice and different because a lot of games like Calico and Cascadia, they have their like little sheets for these challenges. But somehow this one, because you're actually making progress on this map, it felt a little nicer and more motivating to me.
All right. So on a scale of what scales do we do? 1 to 5 or 1 to 10?
1 to 5. How excited are you to play it again? 1 being I would actively avoid it and say no if someone invited me, and 5 being like, let's stop recording. We're going to go play it right now.
Yep.
This is a solid 4 for me.
Well, really? Okay.
But again, this is a solid 4 as a solo game. I don't think that you and I would enjoy playing it together.
Why do you say that? Outside of the fact that I don't generally like losing to games.
Well, you can't lose. You just don't get as good of a score as possible. And honestly, these are all things I don't normally like. But just as a solo, relaxing solo puzzle, I just enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to. Like, it's so simple. It's so straightforward. And you just kind of, you know, focus on the puzzle. It's super fast to set up. You're just, you know, shuffling up some tiles. It was just one of those mindful, peaceful games. And just, you know, the fun of unlocking new boxes and getting new challenges was kind of cool.
Okay. So what's the other contender? So you have
Dorf Romantic. The next game, and this is one that technically you played and I did not. This is Fun Facts, which is designed by Casper Lapp and published by Repos Productions. So this is in the same series, kind of started with Just One. Then they did So Clover, which is another kind of word type game. And now they've come out with Fun Facts, which is really kind of a getting to know your friends type of game. So in Fun Facts, you're going to have a group of friends together. Each person's going to have a little plastic arrow, I guess, for lack of a better word, and a dry erase marker. You're going to write your name on one side of the arrow. Then you're going to flip it over. Basically, you'll take turns asking a question that will have a numerical answer. So maybe the question will be, how many movies do you see in an average month? And everyone's going to ponder that for a while. They're going to secretly write down their answer. Then kind of that first player, whoever asks the questions, going to go put their little plastic arrow down. So just their name showing, no one can see their number. That's going down the middle of the table. Then in turn, going around the circle, everyone has to go and put their plastic piece down either above or below that first piece. They have to try and guess, do I see more movies, fewer movies? And of course, as you go around the circle, there's more and more of those arrows. So people have to guess where they want to slot them in. And then basically at the end, you flip them all over and see how many you are able to get in the correct ascending order. And then you do it all over again with 8 different questions.
I think the vibe of this game is Just One and the game True Colors. If they come together and have a love child, it would be this game. The general play of it feels like a Just One in terms of, you know, how cooperative it feels and how it's kind of, you know, in relation to each other to a degree. The True Color element really comes in because you're really learning about your friends, but also seeing how well you know your friends, because you get to slot yourself, your numerical answer, as it relates to whether you think you have a higher number or a lower number compared to your friends. So it was always, I think for me too, was more exciting. The reveal was more exciting than Just One, because Just One, the person looks at all the clues and then they guess it, which is still totally loads of fun. But with this, as you reveal from the lowest to the highest, there's this excitement of, oh, okay, are we still good on making sure that the numericals are in ascending order or descending order? And that game and how we got to play it made it fun.
I feel like it takes away the pressure of Just One, because being that person who's trying to guess, I feel like, especially for certain people, like that can be really stressful. Whereas in this, it's kind of on everyone.
Yeah.
And it's not a big deal when you get something wrong. It's just like, okay, so that's one less point that round. And you're just competing to see how well, like it's all cooperative and you're just trying to see how well you can do.
Yeah, it definitely feels like much less pressure and more personal, because just when you're just trying to have your guesser guess the right word, which is a task that's not really personal, but for Fun Facts, you're actually going to a personal answer to those questions.
So do you think, we don't own this game, but in the future, if we did, do you think it'd be a game you'd pull out, or we'd pull out pretty frequently? Like, would it work well for you? Like, does it feel like it would be a good game for like a getting to know you thing for work? Or?
So here's the thing. I would play... if I only had the choice between Just One and Fun Facts, I go with Just One, because Just One allows you to play with more people. And when I say more people, like it's It's good for different combinations of groups, whether it's a really new group of people, whether it's a group of old friends, whether it's your work friends or your friends that you knew all the way back from elementary school. For fun facts to actually play well, I feel you need to have a group of people that know each other relatively well. So I played with a bunch of coworkers outside of work. So not only do we know each other well enough at work, we enjoyed each other's company to spend time outside of work. And I think that's the demographic of people you want to get and play this game in order for it to be fun.
Okay, so more people you know rather than using it as like a getting to know you type game.
Yeah, just one could be like, you can use it in any occasion. You have a bunch of new people, you're starting a new game group and you want everyone to just warm them and have fun. Of course, just one. It doesn't matter for just one in my mind as much whether you know each other good enough or not. Yeah, but fun facts, you kind of need to know them because the fun of fun facts is we're an awesome group of people. We know each other so well, or you're invested in that relationship enough for you to learn something new as the answers are revealed and go like, okay. Oh my gosh, I can't believe you watch like 30 movies in a month, right? So there needs to be some existing relationship in my mind between the group of players in order to make fun facts fun.
Okay.
So interesting. Just one is more versatile in my mind.
All right. And we haven't played So Clover yet. I hope to do that because I've heard it's really good. But anyways, okay. So moving on to our last Spiel nominee, that is Next Station London. We've talked about this one before. It is a flip and write about making train lines in London. Basically, there's four different colors in the game, and you're going to be taking turns using those four different colors to draw out your train lines, four separate train lines. There are certain things you're trying to go for. Your base points from each line is going to come from how many different sections of London you visit, multiplied by how many stations you have in your most visited section. You're trying to connect multiple lines to the same station. You want all those interchanges. There's like tourist destinations. You want to try and go to a bunch of those. There's also goals within each game. And you can get quite a few points if you manage to meet those before the end of the game. And as well, you can optionally play with these pencil powers. So each colored pencil has its own special power that you can usually use once per basically drawing that route. And I mean, again, I'm going to let you talk about it, Sharon, because you're the one who's deep dived into Next Station London.
Well, here's the thing. I think much like Railroad Inc., that's not entirely true. What I was going to say is that I've only played this game over on BGA, and I enjoy Railroad Inc. a lot on BGA. And I have a niggling feeling that this game plays better on BGA simply because you don't have to figure out the pens and figure out, you know, what's the next card that I'm drawing. The upkeep of it is absolutely nil when it comes to BGA. And when I play it over on BGA, where a lot of things are automated, it becomes really addictive because now you just want to learn how to get as many points as possible and try to maximize your next moves. And especially on BGA, when they have a daily challenge, so you get to essentially compete in an asynchronous way with a bunch of people that get the exact same game as you, it's just interesting to see how wide the range of scoring can get based on, you know, you have the exact same play, exact same game, exact same cards that's being drawn out, but it's really up to, well, part of it's still luck, but part of it is strategy and skill on how to maximize those combos and how to win those game goals or game objectives in order for you to get as many points as possible.
Okay. Yeah. It does give that same vibe. I'm honestly a bit surprised that it was nominated for the regular Spiel because it feels a little heavier than those games. Like you look at Fun Facts, which is really a party game. I literally taught it while you guys played. And Dorf Romantic has a few things going on too. But yeah, it was nice to see it. Okay. Okay. So you haven't played Dorf Romantic, but given those three games, what game do you want to win the Spiel?
If it's just between Fun Facts and Next Station, I think it'll go to Next Station. I'm not sure about Dorf Romantic. I feel like there's some more stuff going on in Dorf Romantic by the sounds of it. I like the sound of the campaign ability where you get to sort of expand and explore and unlock certain things. So I think just based on what I know, Next Station London, it's a really solid game. I've been obsessed with it for quite some time, much like Railroad Inc., maybe a little less compared to Railroad Inc., but if it's all those three games, if I need to bet with just the information that I have.
Well, not betting. What game do you want to win?
Oh, what game do I want to win? Next Station London. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So now going back to what game do you think is going to win?
Dorf Romantic.
Oh,
I don't know.
Interesting.
It seems like it has more bells and whistles and it's a little bit more involved. Because I'm thinking about past winners and I feel like they tend to go for something that has a little bit more oomph while it's still pretty much a really simple, straightforward type of game. I don't know whether that's accurate, but that's just my gut. But given that I haven't played Dorf Romantic, but I feel that's like true. Next Station London is really, really good. So I think I want Next Station London to win. And maybe I'm just making all sorts of assumptions around what Dorf Romantic is. But how about you? You've played all three.
So for me, what I want to win, I enjoy Dorf Romantic a lot more than I thought I would. However, I still see it. And even like Board Game Geek on their ratings agrees, Dorf Romantic is a 1 to 2 player game. Really, I feel like it's a solo game. Like, sure, if you're a couple and you get along great, or maybe you have like a friend over and you all work together well, you can play at three players, but you really don't need more than one person making decisions. And I feel like, especially trying to play at 6 player, like you're just asking for alpha gaming, like, and at least 3 or 4 of those people are going to be getting bored. So in my mind, that's too nichey to win the Spiel. Now, whether they will see it that way, I don't know. So that leaves Fun Facts and Next Station London. I think I want Next Station London to win as well. My gut instinct tells me that Fun Facts is going to win.
Just because Just One won?
Yes. I think Just One did win. Just One won. Yeah, and I feel like it's just going to have a wider appeal. Although that's interesting. I like that like insight, like what you said about it really being for a group of people that already know each other.
Yeah, Just One, just like, again, comparing Just One to Fun Facts, right? Just One is a clear winner because it has a wider appeal. It works with more people. Fun Facts doesn't.
Yeah.
And besides, I feel like Fun Facts gives the same vibe as Just One. You know, like I sometimes feel like these awards, they award for novelty and innovation, and not saying that the idea of Just One has never existed, but it never was put together in the form that it was in that really formalized board game form. And I feel like that's what gave it the edge. Fun Facts as a sort of almost a sequel to, well, it is, right? A sequel to Just One. I'm like, I don't know. Sequels are rarely as good as the original. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 I still think I want Next Station London to win. I don't think it's going to.
But you think
I would be very happily surprised if it does.
Oh, okay.
And I I think you thought Dorf Romantic's going to win. So I'll say I think Fun Facts is going to win because those seem like the two most likely. Okay.
All right.
So those are our guesses. Oh, I forgot to say. So Next Station London was designed by Matthew Dunstan and published by multiple publishers, but I think most commonly by Blue Orange Games. All right, so with that, let's go into the Kenner Spiel. So these are the slightly more complex games for the connoisseur gamer. Basically, I think they're aimed at people who are already, you know, relatively comfortable with gaming already. So I think we've been going in alphabetical order and we'll keep doing that. So the first game up is one that we have both played, and that is Challengers. Ooh, and yeah. Challengers is designed by Johannes Krenner and Marcus Odier Slawiszczak. I'm so sorry. And published by One More Time Games. And in Challengers, it plays from, well, technically one, but I can't see that being fun. We'll say from 2 to 8 people. And basically, you're going to be split up on kind of opposing basically one other player over a bunch of rounds, and you're playing a series of capture the flag tournaments. It is a deck building game, sort of. Everyone starts with a basic starter deck, and before each tournament, you're going to have the option to draw a couple cards. As the tournaments progress, you get access to kind of more powerful cards. So you'll have, you know, the option, you can draw a couple of those, and then you can discard however many cards from your deck as you want. So it kind of takes that culling mechanism and just turns it on its head, because you can just get rid of anything. And why that matters is once you get into a match, you're basically taking turns. The first person's going to flip their card. The card's going to have a value. That value is, they're automatically going to capture the flag on that first turn. Then the next person starts flipping cards. They have to either flip through one or multiple cards, enough cards where their values add up to either the same or higher than their opponent's card. Then they'll take the flag, and so on and so forth. You go back and forth. But as once you have a card, or, you know, a group of cards that have captured the flag, it's just that top card's value that matters. And once the opposing person has taken that flag away, those cards go on to the stands as, you know, cheering on the rest of your team. And your stands can only seat so many people. So you can lose by getting too many people in your stands. So you don't necessarily want to hold on to all those cards you're collecting. Or you can also lose if you need to draw another card to, you know, take the flag away and you can't. So it's this interesting balance between, you want enough cards to make sure you can go through and keep capturing it and you're not going to run out, but you don't want too many cards because you don't want to run out of seats on your stand. And of course, there are, I think, 8 different themes of cards. So like there's, you know, movies or aliens, things like that. And quite a few of the cards will have special power. Either, you know, maybe it'll be a special power that when you're attacking, you're trying to get that flag, it may give you, you know, extra points. Or if it's in flag possession, if it's the card that captured the flag, it's going to get extra points based on things. Some cards are going to let you, you know, you remove cards from your bench, or maybe you'll get to reorder your deck. So it's basically trying to put together the best deck of cards that you can before, basically over the course of all these tournaments, because at the end of the game, after 7 tournaments have been played, whichever 2 players have won the most, have the most points from these tournaments, they're going to go in a head-to-head finale, and whoever wins that, winner takes all. Doesn't matter how many points you came up with before, whoever wins that final match is going to win the tournament. Now, we have only played this on Board Game Arena. I have played it once asynchronous, which is definitely not how I recommend starting with this game. But we did also play it live as well. So that's basically how challenges work. What did you think of it, Sharon?
I really liked it. I wasn't quite sure how to make of it at the beginning. But the idea of creating your own deck and culling it, you know, through between tournaments, and the suspense of, oh no, my bench is filling up. I don't want to lose just because my bench is so utterly full. That was a lot of fun. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed it. It was something that I think was a newer concept. Like I don't think I've ever played something in that format. And it was just, you know, it was a lot of fun. A little convoluted with the, when we played with 4 people, because I wasn't quite sure around why we're battling each other so many times. I'm sure there was an explanation around the iterations, but that part was a little confusing to me.
I think they have tournament cards that you hand out, and they're, you know, the which card you get is based on how many players there are. So I think there's always going to be basically 8 rounds. So when you don't have eight players, then you can't, instead of a round robin playing each person once, you're going to be swapping up back and forth with meetups.
Oh, so there will always be eight games.
It always be eight head to heads. And then if you have an odd number of players, they have a robot, like an AI deck that you play against.
Okay. I was going to say, I like the idea that the gameplay is essentially simultaneous. So you're almost always active. Because even though it's a 1v1 game, every round is actually paired up with the players, right? So I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot more than I expected to. And even playing asynchronously, which is not ideal, I just kind of got the vibe. And then when we had the chance to play it live with our friends, I enjoyed it way more. It kind of gives you that like just one feel where like I can't believe someone hasn't thought of this before. Like it just takes deck building and puts this really unique twist on it. And
I'm not a fan of the theme though, or the art though. That's the only thing. I think
Oh,
it
yeah.
goes for the really sort of wacky, funny vibe. But I'm like, oh, this is, for me, I'm like, I'm sure there could be an easily different varieties and versions of it to make it more fantastical or make it all cute or whatever it might be.
They've already come out with challengers too.
Oh, have they? Oh, wow, that's
Yeah,
fast.
another bunch of different cards that it's either a standalone or you can mix and match with the base.
Well, the thing that I like about this game is that sometimes you can push your luck a little bit based on what you have in your hand. Like there are certain modifier cards that allow that if they're revealed early on and they're benched, it increases the, I guess, fighting power of some of your lower
Yeah.
level cards. So sometimes it's like, ah, oh, do I keep all these like lower level cards on my hand, knowing that as soon as this card is benched, all these cards now become a lot more powerful, or should I just forego that strategy and really just focus on higher quality cards? There's a whole thought process around, well, I want duplicates of the same cards because they get to share a seat on the bench, which
Yes.
decreases the likelihood of the benches filling up. So it's, even though it's like a wacky, seemingly really fun, straightforward game, there's definitely some thought and strategy that goes into this game.
Well, the other thing I like about it, like when I the asynchronous game I played first, I lost my first two or three rounds, and it took me a while. I'm like, okay, I can see why. Okay, my bench is filling up. That's why I'm losing. And losing the first two or three rounds, you're not out of it because as you go through, like the winner of, the future tournaments, the later the tournament is, the more points you're getting from it. So you're never out. And because you can discard however many cards you want, you always have that opportunity to come back. Like if you can all of a sudden figure out, oh, this is what's wrong with my deck. You're going to get an opportunity to, come back in and maybe win the last few and have like a surprise victory at the end, which I kind of like. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. It was really fun. And I did hear one of the people I was playing asynchronous with, she was like, "Yeah, I don't really like it. Like the game just plays itself," which is true enough to some extent in the tournament phase. Because you're just flipping cards by rote and filling. But sometimes there's some decisions to make if you're emptying people out of your bench. But for me, that's not the game. And it's still fun, especially like if you're playing live and you're cheering each other on. And that excitement for me was palpable of, oh no, my bench is getting full, but so is hers.
I
Oh, I
think
ran out of cards.
for this game, unlike Railroad Inc. or Next Station London, this game will be even more fun in person because there's like this the
Yes.
tactile, the excitement of the reveal of
Yeah.
the cards that you're pulling out, which was robbed from us when it was all very much automated on BGA. But I mean, of course it was, right? It's on BGA. For me, I'm like, okay, this game was so much fun on Board Game Arena, and I bet, in its true form, in person, physical form, it'll be even more fun.
And I watched a how to play video for it, and the components look really nice. Like they have, because you have three different decks to kind of increase the chat, like that get more powerful. They have a little plastic piece you put together and it holds those three decks, and behind it is like a nice little place where you can discard your cards so they stay with that deck. So it's going to, I think, help with the setup and cleanup. It keeps everything neat and tidy. And I think the, because each, basically each tournament that's going on has its own little park. And I think they were little neoprene mats at each person. Oh, so, you know, you've got your two, they're sitting, you're sitting across from each other in your park. And it was just, yeah, this is a game I actually think I might want to buy when I'm allowed to do such things as that. I would like to acquire this. I think it would be fun. And to have a game that plays eight people that's still kind of thinky, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's always active with minimal lulls. Yeah.
Minimal downtime. You can't ask, in my opinion, you can't ask for much better than challengers for that.
No. Okay. What's the next?
All right. Next game on the list is one that you haven't played. And we did, I think we talked about this relatively recently, so we can probably go a little quicker. This is Iki. Which was designed by Kuda Yamada and, oh yes, published by Utsuroi, Utsuroi. 12 more. Now, this game was actually published originally back in 2015, but I believe it just got released in Europe or Germany, which is why it was nominated this year. And Iki's a pretty classic kind of Euro game. With a few little twists, you're hiring artisans, you're going to be putting those out in the market. There's different markets, so you're kind of competing within those markets to score at the end of each round. You also want, there's also kind of a worker placement almost. You've got people moving around those markets. You want people to come and visit yours because then your person working in that shop is going to gain experience and you're able to retire them and you're getting better benefits the more experience they have. And it's set, the kind of cool thing is it's set in feudal Japan and there's fire, three times during the game. One of these four different market areas is going to catch fire working from the outside in. And if someone in that, section of stalls doesn't have a high enough fire rating to stop the fire, everyone's stalls are just going to burn and you lose everything. And I'm not going to go into too much more depth than that since we did just talk about it recently, a couple episodes ago.
I feel like Iki needs an expansion where they finally discover the arsonist that's been creating fires. And then there's a another sort of mechanism where you have to catch the fire setter.
Oh, there we go. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. Expansion.
Yeah.
I think an expansion did just come out for it.
Was it the arsonist? Iki,
I don't think so.
Well, that's a complete
but they're definitely missing a trick. You should design that. Get on that.
I should. Absolutely should. That's too bad. That was a total missed opportunity.
Total miss on their part. And yeah, it's good. It's a solid Euro game. But again, I think it's tough because it's a few years old now. And I liked it. There's lots of interesting things going on, lots of interesting decisions to make, but it didn't stand out to me from all the other Euros out there, I guess.
To me, it seemed like a pretty classic, having not played it, it just appears as though it's a pretty classic Euro game. You know, like what is actually new about it? What's actually exciting and innovative about it?
Well, and
then
like
I know we had this conversation around.
Yeah.
So, you know, between this and Yokohama, like what really is there enough of a shift and difference?
It's a very different game, but it loses that spatial puzzle. And there's a bit of push your luck with the fire. Like you could not increase your fire rating in hopes that you can hide behind other people that are. But yeah, I think you would enjoy the game, but I don't think that it would blow you away. But I still would like to play it with you. And I think like the theme is really interesting. The game is beautiful. And I feel like it has flown under the radar a little bit. I haven't heard as many people talk about it, especially, you know, in the last couple of years before it got nominated. So yeah, I think it definitely deserves a look and a play. But I don't think it is one of my must-haves, need to immediately go get this.
So between one to five, five, let's stop this podcast and play it. One, you're going to actively avoid playing this game. Where would you rate this game?
3 or 3.5?
Okay. All right. How about the challengers? Where would you rate that game?
If we had a group of friends coming over, or we could just call people up and say, hey, let's play challengers, that would be like a solid 4.5, maybe even a 5.
Oh, wow. Really? Okay.
But I don't think I would want to play it 2-player. Like, yeah, you can, but I don't think I'd want to.
Okay.
I think you need at least 4.
I don't think it's a 4.5 for me, but it's definitely a 4.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Not too shabby.
All right.
Okay.
What's the last one?
Should we move on to the last one? So the last game is Planet Unknown, which was designed by Ryan Lambert and Adam Reberg and published by, well, quite a few different ones, but the first one coming up is Adam's Apple Games. So Planet Unknown is a Kickstarter from a year or two ago that fulfilled the last few months. And in Planet Unknown, everyone has their own planet, and you are basically choosing polyomino tiles to place on your planet, playing a bit of a spatial puzzle game as you're building it out. You're also getting the option, you're maneuvering little ships around to pick up asteroids. You're trying to fill as many columns and rows as you can, because those are the completed ones are going to score you points. There's also all these different land types, and different land types each time you place a tile down, the land types that you're placing down, as well as the, you know, ones that they're touching, they're going to activate, and each land type gives you a different power. You're basically using them to bump up these different tracks. And as you go up these different tracks, it can increase your ability to, say, move that little rover around and pick up asteroids, or it increases, oh goodness, it's been a little while since we've played this and I'm forgetting what the other tracks do. Oh, there's a tech track. So you can, you know, draw a tech card, play out technology cards that give you extra bumps or maybe end game scoring. Yeah, there's just quite a few different things going on, bumping tracks and a neat polyomino puzzle. And kind of the unique feature, I guess, of Planet Unknown is how you're drafting these polyominoes. They have a lazy Susan that sits in the center of the table. And this game plays from 1 to 6 people. And the lazy Susan split basically in 6 different quadrants. And you take turn being the active first player. The active player gets to pick which quadrant of this lazy Susan they want in front of themselves. And then everyone else has to pick from whatever quadrant ends up in front of their zone. And each quadrant has 2 shapes, basically, you can pick from. And you can see which land types are on those top 2 ones. So you know what land types you're picking. And then when you pick one up, you're going to put it on your board, and that reveals the next one for the next person. So yeah, it was kind of an interesting little polyomino game.
I think we played over in Gobfest.
We did, and we talked about it then, but we might as well refresh everyone on our thoughts.
I liked it.
Yeah, I remember you feeling fairly about it.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, because on paper, like if I'm looking at its resume and its table presence, it's all there. It looks a lot more intense than it really is, which is kind of, it's fun in that own way. I generally really like polyominoes, and I don't know, maybe it was just an off game or off experience for me, but I just found it like it was a good game, but it wasn't a game that made me want to go back for more, because I feel like if I was craving a polyomino game, I could go elsewhere to get that. If I was craving a game with more tech trees and increasing powers, I could go play something else to fulfill that itch, right? It was a neat combination of all of those things in a different format. The Lazy Susan was pretty cool. But for me, it would be a 3 for me. Yeah. From a scale of 1 to 5, it would be a 3 for me.
Yeah, I think I liked it a little more than you, but for me, it's still around a 3.5. I think if we frequently had a group of 6 people that really like polyomino games, great. And it's one of those games where it's going to play about the same speed, regardless of whether you have 2 players or 6. because everyone's choosing their polyominoes simultaneously, putting those down, bumping the tracks. So it's not like it's going to be bogged down with more players. And again, that's cool. Having a game with some, thinkiness that's not going to get bogged down with six players, that's great, just like Challengers. But yeah, there's polyomino games I enjoy more. And I think for me, the real killer for Planet Unknown is that it's very expensive. Like for us to buy the retail copy, it's $80 or $90. And I don't think it does anything crazy. Again, there's nothing super unique about it.
It's not an $80 or $90 game, but I understand why the price is set at that, just because of the components and of the Lazy Susan. And I think even the tech track was one of those double layered boards. So I
Think so, yeah.
understand why. But traditionally, when I'm getting an $80, $90 game, I'm expecting some level of heft in the game that I'm about to play. And that's maybe not quite it. I'd say that I pay, like, this feels more like a $40, $50 game to me.
Yeah, and I can see like the Lazy Susan would add some price, like add some to that price. And there's quite a bit of stuff in the box, but for me, the other, and this is very niggly, and maybe a lot of people won't care. Now, keep in mind, we borrowed, from the library at GobFest, but people take pretty good care of these games. However, you cannot store this game vertically. Even with that, Lazy Susan has a nice lid on it. Feels like you should be able to store this vertically. When we grabbed it, there were pieces all over. Like it just does not stay together. And again, it's a little thing, but we like storing our games vertically. And it's annoying to have this one game that has to stay flat, especially when you paid $80 or $90 for it. Okay, maybe that's just a me thing, but I feel like it needs to be said.
It's a game with no insert jet. Game that you can't store vertically on the bookshelf directly to jail.
Exactly. So those were the Kennerspiel nominees. We had Challengers, Iki, and Planet Unknown. Same question. Which game do you want to win? Not what you think is going to win. What do you want to win?
I want the challengers to win.
Nice. Yeah, I'm
I
not
want
going to
that
bury
to
the lead.
win
Me
it.
too. I desperately
Yeah, it
want
was
Challengers to
fun.
win.
It was fun. Despite the art or the theme, I still really, really enjoyed it. So I
It's
want the
unique.
challengers
It
to win.
really feels different. Okay.
However, I think Planet Unknown's going to win.
That
I
was
don't know.
exactly my thought.
Right? I don't know why. I feel like it has the right ingredients. It has the right, I almost want to say hype. Yeah, it has the right
Yes,
hype.
it
It
has a lot of hype.
has the right ingredients. It looks cool. Like it physically looks cool. It has a presence. I feel like that glamour monkey is gonna win.
Yep. You know what? I'd be okay with Iki winning too, I think,
Oh
just
yeah.
because like it's a pretty heavy game for the Kennerspiel. Like it's a weight rating of a 3 point something, like low threes, which is pretty heavy even for the Kennerspiel. But yeah, I think Planet Unknown is probably going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are our thoughts on the Spiel nominees. Very pleased that I actually managed to play all six of them. That is a first. Thank you, Board Game Arena, and other friends of ours that loaned us games.
I was gonna say, what I'm interested in is how other people are predicting the potential winners. If anyone has played some of these games, what are their thoughts around these newer games? Also, I just want to apologize for the weird podcast today because we're, I guess, recording this over Zoom since Jaina's actually away from the recording studio. So there's been some
And
weird
now
lag
there is
time.
literally a woodpecker pecking on the wall right above my head.
Oh, is that actually happening? That's so funny.
I don't know that the mic's picking it up, but if it does, that's what that weird noise is.
Well, I can't hear it. Could you hear the cats yelling from outside the backyard?
No.
No? Okay, see. All right. So I
Okay.
guess, yeah, none of those
Maybe not
things
so
were
bad.
picked up,
Yes,
but
I kudos to podcast people who always record on Zoom, I don't know how you do it. It's very it's challenging.
Very hard to not talk.
And I'm not looking forward to editing this.
People, just like how we're doing currently, right now, actively.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. I feel like we should just give up at this point. But yes, yeah. We would love to hear your thoughts. Hopefully, they don't actually announce any winners. It is currently June 27th. Hopefully, when this episode goes live on the 30th, they have not yet announced the winners. But we will see if they have. What are your thoughts on the winners?
Well, let us know what your thoughts are, whether you have a favorite, whether we've offended you by our truly unpopular opinions, or maybe our opinions are simply wrong, which I tend to tell a lot of people. Let us know. And you can let us know on all these different ways. Check our show notes to find whichever way is most convenient for you. But just to ramble off a few, we have a BGG guild. We have a Discord channel. You can send us an email. We have been known to update our Instagrams once in a while, which is
the last couple
of
weeks.
Exciting. That's
shocking.
Right. Shocking. So, hey, those are some avenues where you can tell us how right or disastrously wrong we are.
Yeah. And until next time,
happy gaming
and stay gamesy.